Welcome to the Up the Cream podcast, episode 14. I'm Dan Tomlinson, and I'm joined, as always, by Rich Harrison, a.k.a. Pommy Rich. How you doing, pal?
I'm well, mate. And you?
Yeah, not too bad. Although, still slightly gutted, 48 hours on from Hull FC's semi-final defeat. Hull 18, St Helens 33 at Leigh Sports Village. I mean, proud, ultimately. That is a big emotion right now, proud in defeat. We don't want to lose games, obviously, but I can accept that effort and the commitment in Hull FC is outstanding. And sometimes, as a fan, it is all we ask for.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, with 5-6 minutes to go, I would have backed us to win that. The way we were coming back and the way that we were starting to break the line and the way we were dominating them and winning the collision, it was only, you know, like a freak interception by Regan Grace that put us to bed finally, because, mate, we were right in that. It's like I said last week, we didn't have much to fear for St Helens. I knew we had a lot of improvement in us, and I didn't think St Helens had a lot in them. And I think that was kind of proved to be right. The final scoreline obviously flatters them with a late interception and then that freakish try at the end as well, which, you know, the game had already gone by that point. So, yeah, mate, proud is the overriding emotion. I completely agree.
It's weird, isn't it? Because you look at the league game and it was 16-34 and then that's 18-33. So, well, you look at them two results on paper and it don't look much difference, but that's not the case at all. I mean, you're absolutely right. The end result flatters them. And I thought Hull significantly improved for that cup game. They were right in it. Like you say, if that pass from Jake Connor, if it sticks in Carlos's hands, you know, Hull are going to Wembley, or very likely going to Wembley. So, and yeah, absolutely. Outstanding play from Regan Grace. You've got to say, you know what, there's no substitute for speed, mate. Well done, because that was a freakish play. And he had to take a chance, and it was a huge gamble, and luckily it paid off. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the scoreline really did flatter them, I thought. To come back from 22 down, I must admit, I was stood in that end thinking, nah, it just ain't going to happen for us, unfortunately. And then to, you know, to pull it back to 21-18 and look like we're going to go over again for a fourth trying, you know, and take the lead. That takes some balls, doesn't it? It showed a lot of character, a lot of spirit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the fighting Hull right now is brilliant.
You're dead right. Yeah, you're dead right, mate. And you know, we should be proud of a performance like that. And you're dead right what you say about Regan Grace as well. That's ballsy. To come out of the line and to go for an interception where if you miss that, you've left your line completely at the mercy of the opposition. That takes guts. And knowing that you've got the speed to get yourself out of trouble, you know? And you know, just one of those things. Unfortunately, you know, Connor threw that pass and he'd thrown, you know, he's the leading, or the joint leading assists, try assists in the league. And that's why, because he takes chances like that and because he can split the line with a mismanned pass and you know, with a rainbow ball over the top that he sometimes does. It's a throw of the dice. And to be honest, it was probably 75-25 in our favour. And Regan Grace just rolled the dice and went for it. And you know, unfortunately, on such fine margins, games are decided.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got no issues with Jake Connor there. And just kicked the 40-20 to obviously get Hull in that position. And it was a second tackle play, but that's the type of player he is. I mean, we've raved, haven't we, in the past 2 weeks about that pass to Adam Swift at Leeds. You know, the kick to Adam Swift last week at St Helens. And like you say, he's joint with Johnny Lomax, who still for me is the best player in the comp. He's joint with him in the Super League assist chats. And sometimes it sticks, doesn't it? And sometimes it don't. And that's the type of player he is. And he'll win more games for Hull FC in the future than, you know, than ones where the player don't come off. And you just got to accept that. I mean, he's a phenomenal player. It just shows that
he's a heads-up player.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He plays what's in front of him regardless of what number's on the tackle count or what minutes on the clock. He plays what's in front of him. And you know, you don't want to be coaching that out of him. You really don't. He's our maverick, and we need one in the team because, you know, Snead is an organising halfback, but he's not particularly a creative halfback. And Reynolds is a running halfback. So, you know, you need someone from fullback chiming in with that. And we never got that with Shaw. Shaw gave us speed and safety. Connor brings something else, and we cannot coach that out of him. And yet it means that sometimes we'll have our head in our hands, but it also means that sometimes we'll be jumping around in the stands as well. And, you know, I just think that it's unfortunate and it's unlucky, but we wouldn't have been in that situation if he hadn't kicked the 40-20.
Or had a huge influence in that second half comeback, which he did. You know, there was a couple
totally.
When Snead, Reynolds, Connor, Carlos Finua for one of the tries when Maia got in the corner, and it was great to see that combination obviously fire again. Reynolds in the second half was very good, it must be said, and obviously Connor when he came into the light was brilliant. And it's sort of interesting because all at 22 down had nothing to lose. It definitely coincided for me that comeback with Chris Satai coming back on, who I thought was absolutely phenomenal again. He's that block is incredible.
You're right. I mean, it was about 10 minutes in the second half. They were kind of camped on our line, and he made a tackle and he kind of went down on one knee, and I thought, that's it, he's gone, he's gassed. Do you know, he is absolutely out on his feet. And then he made the next two tackles. Mate, he just summons up reserves of energy from somewhere. I'm hearing that we've more or less all but signed him for the next couple of seasons, but we need to get that name on that piece of paper soon, because someone's going to come in and steal him away from us, because, mate, he has been head and shoulders our best player this season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've pretty much said that he's probably only rivaled with Adam Swift and Jake Connor himself. If you're going by the opening 11 games this year, he's been absolutely phenomenal. I was going to say, we're looking at that comeback right now. You have to go from 20 points to 2 down to 21-18. And I don't know if it's a coincidence, but like you say, the game changes when Satai comes on. You've got a bloke that's, you know, winning the floor, getting momentum, and then obviously winning the rucks to get Hull FC in the field position to rampage downfield. And that sort of coincided for me with a little bit of shackles off, and I thought Hull FC sort of went away from the structure a little bit and just started throwing it about and playing what they saw, you know, a bit of off-the-cuff rugby. And it brought the best out of them. But I'm just thinking if there's any mileage in that, or is it literally just down to a prop forward that was, you know, winning the rucks? And it was an interesting topic because our attack still isn't properly firing. It's all like the same way, yeah, we've got Connor who's joint top of the assist charts, but we've actually only reached the 20-point mark in two of our last seven games. And one of those was against Wakefield, obviously, yes, a bottom four side. The other one was the cup win against Wigan when we beat them 20 points to 10. So it is an interesting one. It sort of shows the need for, you know, two props. And we all bang this drum every week. I think 95% of the supporter base is banging this drum for a couple of new props now. But it shows, doesn't it? If you can get on the front foot and you've got a forward that can poke his nose through the line, then it sort of goes hand in hand. And the point I'm making here as well is this is where I say Reynolds came into his own, Jake Connor comes into his own. It's all right slagging those players off, but if they've got a foundation to play off, what can they do? And it shows that when they had that foundation, they came into their own.
I mean, we've said it before, mate. I mean, we can go back a few seasons and look at Albert Kelly and look at how he thrived behind a winning pack for us. Literally, you know, 3 months after dying a death behind a pack at Rovers that was retreating. You know, just all you need is you need a strong forward pack to lay those foundations for little blokes to do the work. And, you know, like you said, when Satai and Sal are absolutely firing, and arguably Fash, who I thought, again, was fantastic, and Manu Maru, I thought, was very, very good against Saints. When they're going forward and when they're landing on their hands and knees and making a quick play of the ball, and you've got Houghton dashing out of acting half, you know, it enables your little blokes to do the work. And I think that when we're talking about Satai and Sau especially, I don't think what can be underestimated is just how quick they are with the play of the ball and how much they turn a defensive side around quickly. You know, if Satai gets up quick and plays that ball quick, and you've got Houghton dashing from acting half, or you've got Connor steaming through the middle looking for an offload or whatever, it puts doubt in people's minds. And you can see the little guys have then been able to have that extra split second to scheme and to place a kick and to pick out another runner. It's just, yeah, you're dead right. I mean, I honestly think that it was their efforts that gained us the permission, if you like, to play off the cuff. You know, you can't play off the cuff when you're getting absolutely trounced and your forwards are going backwards. You still need something. You still need someone to lay that foundation and to actually give you a bit of protection. And that was Satai and Sal, absolutely.
Yeah, them two are brilliant. Just like you say, need a couple more and we'll be pretty much there. And we spoke about this last week, sort of what we need, and obviously the mark that Brett Hodgson's going to stamp on this squad. And, you know, just going away from the St. Helens game a little bit, obviously there was a big thing midweek about Brett Fremo, who looks like it's all nailed on for him to go to Castleford, and Daniel McIntosh from Huddersfield is going to come to Hull. That's a like-for-like swap, you know, winger for winger, but it's obviously a Federation English winger, and it obviously frees up a quarter spot for Hull to go sign, you know, go to Australia and go sign a prop forward or
big prop.
Yeah. or dare I say, a new hooker.
And McIntosh is quick, mate. He's very, very quick. And that's what we need, you know. I mean, we need a Regan Grace, don't we? You know, Swift's quick. But we need someone that can, you know, intercept and go full length of the field with no one getting anywhere near him. And, you know, we haven't had that since Ratu Nalogo left. And we haven't seen Fuluki Japani yet, have we, really? And I don't know, how's he doing on loan at Bradford? Has he actually played? Or?
Yeah, Bradford, if you go on Bradford's Twitter page, they actually put some videos. There was a couple where, you remember them Ratu hits? There was one hit that Ratu did at London once when he came off the line and it absolutely leathered a London Broncos player. Well, there was one where Fuluki Japani, I think I've nailed that, soon found out, did pretty much the same thing, and Bradford have obviously plastered it all over their socials. It's an interesting watch, I said. The clip's available for all to see. But, yeah, I think he's going all right there, hasn't he? He's played a couple of games. Now, obviously, he can stay on loan there till Hull recall him. So, yeah, it's good to see him, obviously, getting some rugby under his belt. Obviously, he's raw, just like Ratu was. And I don't know if we're going to see him in a first-team shirt at all. I don't know. I think we're going to have to... We'll probably have another injury before he even comes into contention, because even right now, with obviously what happened with Josh Griffin, you're going to put... Well, there's two options here. Either Cam Scott comes in or you move Mahe to centre and you put Freemo on with Scott still on the bench. So even still, he's not going to get a look in just yet, is he? I think there are some double-header weekends coming up, though, aren't they, in the Super League season? I think we've got three of them. So who knows, when the squad gets stretched a little bit and fatigue plays its part, you never know, do you? And that's probably why it's so important for him to get minutes under the belt now, especially while there's no reserve grade.
Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah, mate, you look at when Nalogo made his debut. You know, he was our fourth choice winger, and he played in that game when we beat Wigan in Golden Point at the JJB, didn't he? And you know, he was just, that was his first ever game of rugby league, first competitive game of rugby league. Did he score twice?
Yeah,
for
he did. Yeah.
You know, it's just sometimes you know, necessity is the mother of invention, isn't it? And you know, sometimes it is a bit of a Roy of the Rovers story if a player comes in because of an injury crisis and absolutely smashes it and keeps his place, you know, because Nalogo, like you say, fourth choice winger for us, and then, you know, ended up having an extended run in the first team, and by the end of his time with us, he was, you know, he was probably the first name on the team sheet. So, you know, it's just one of those things, mate. We'll just have to see how we go. Obviously, with Griff out now for an extended period of time, there's probably going to be more of an opening there. You know, if they decide to move, if you know, they could move Fanua into the centres, because you know that we actually signed him as a centre rather than as a winger. He played his first couple of games for London centres, so I don't think he'd let anyone down in the centres. Except he's going to have to be a little bit more defensively aware because it's a very different position.
Yeah, I would say there's definitely gradual improvement in Mayer's performance recently. Yeah, I know he got caught out for Regan Grace's first try, but Hull actually didn't get the numbers right. St. Helens hit him on that left side. I think it was a scramble tackle by Josh Reynolds, and then the play after Lomax fires a pass out, and just the speed to play out, sometimes it's impossible to defend, and that was the case then. So I ain't going to, you know, go, you know, too crazy on that front. It was the same last week when he got left 3-on-1 and everyone's hanging out to dry. What are you supposed to do when you're a winger and you've got 3-on-1? Yeah. It's like, if you stay on your wing, the centre scores, you know, centre has a walk-in, you come in, the winger has a walk-in. It's just... No, it's a double-edged sword. You want to hide into nothing. So, I think he's improving, though. I mean, it's still not the player he was in the first spell, but there definitely is some improvement based on what we saw last year.
Totally agree. Yeah, and you know, if you're on your own on the wing, and you've got a 3-on-1, it's not your fault. It's the people inside his fault. You know, you've got a 33% chance of getting it right. What can you do?
Tough one. It is a really tough one. Obviously, Maya is obviously copping that flak because, as we've all said numerous times, was it a signing that we really needed to make? Obviously, when we had Beretta on the Brooks, we had just announced Adam Swift. Obviously, Ratu and Lago had his deal announced as well. Then we go announce the signing of Maya if we want a 3-year deal. We're sort of thinking, well, we've gone very bottom heavy there, and we all know that.
Yeah.
But at the detriment to our forward pack, and we are actually seeing that right now, and that's why we've obviously let Freemo go. Sadly, I do like Britta Freemo, but it is the right decision because the club always comes first.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're paying the price now for some strange recruitment 3 years ago, basically. And we are lighting the forwards, and the fact that we are matching it with teams in the forwards is, you know, nigh on a miracle when... two players that you'd expect to be either in the first team or on the fringes of the first team in Matongo and Scott Taylor are nowhere to be seen because of injury. You know, you've only just got Bowden back after his elbow injury, and you've got Satai and Sow, one of which was you thought probably at the start of the season a bench prop, and the other one's a lock. You know, he's a loose forward, and we're still matching teams and we're still mixing it with teams. So you know, you got your likes, you know, your Jack Browns and your Brad Fashies coming off the bench, and it's not like it was back in the days of 2016 when, you know, we had Watts and Taylor, and then we had Green coming off the bench, and you know, and still giving us Green and Bowden coming off the bench and still giving us that go forward. It was it's different now. The game's quicker because of the six again, and you could probably argue that a lighter, more mobile pack is possibly the way to go. But at the end of the day, I think we need another prop, at least, if not two.
I think the past month has shown that, despite the way the game's gone with its set restarts and, you know, its whippersnappers, I don't think you can rule out the big fella. Catalans, when they came to Hull 3 weeks ago, they just got on top of us with a big pack. I just don't think you can get away with it sometimes, but I just think predominantly to win big games, you'll need a big pack. You've got to win that middle, and you do that with 6 foot two, 18 stone brick shithouses that get on top of the opposition. And we've seen that with Satai. He's been Hull's best player this year, and look at the size of the bloke. You know, he's incredible. Just need a couple more like that. And I think when we get a couple more like that, then obviously we'll be a force to be reckoned with again. And that's not to say that, obviously, I don't believe that Hull won't be a playoff team and maybe can shock a few clubs at the end of the season, because I think they will. I think we've shown with our effort, our commitment, the fact we never back down, the fighting us right now, we've shown that we can compete with the best sides. And you know, I saw a lot of people moaning about the performance, saying we need this, we need that, it's not good enough, blah blah blah. St Helens are the best team in this country, the best team in the Northern Hemisphere, so you know, they're a phenomenal club, and we've matched them. You know, we've not just got smashed, we've actually come real close, gone toe to toe, come back almost and almost won the game, a pass away from Wembley. You know, the mood completely changes if that kind of pass sticks, doesn't it? It's just because we've lost, people think, oh, we're rubbish, oh, we're not this, we're not that. I think that's a load of bollocks. I think the improvement so far under Brett Hodgson has been staggering, and this is still, like you'll say all the time, this is still Lee Radford squad plus Josh Reynolds. Imagine what he can do with his own, you know, once he's made his own stamp and a few signings and a few, you know, contract renewals with the blokes he wants to keep. I mean, next year is really exciting, but I think this year is exciting too, because, like I say, with those mental components and the fact we have, I've got a lot of quality as well, there's still a lot to play for.
Yeah, you're right, and our next five or six games are essential now. Now we've got nothing else to play for. Now we're out of the cup. Now you can concentrate on the league and all of those cliches and everything. The game on Thursday against Castleford is now an essential must-win for me. We need to put a marker down, and we need to say we don't just play good football in knockout football, you know, in knockout rugby. We need to be absolutely on for that Thursday game. Absolutely on. Both sides played on Saturday, so you know you've got the same amount of fatigue. Castleford are on a high because they're at Wembley and they just beat Warrington. We've got something to prove because we just got knocked out by St Helens. I think it's a very interesting game, this game against Castleford, and it's a must-win for me. It really is. Because Cass haven't been great. They've been hot and cold. They've been the hottest and the coldest, you know? Whereas we've just kind of trundled along on a decent, you know, kind of tepid water kind of thing, where we haven't got too good and we haven't gone too bad. We need to really push. This is the game that we need to win, to put that marker down, to show the rest of the league. Hull have got a bit of an easy run of fixtures coming up. If they put five or six or seven games together on a trot, or, you know, even five out of six or five out of seven, we're going to be right up there in the top three, top four. And then teams should start to fear us. So this game, for me, is the start of the rest of our season.
I completely agree there. Absolutely. You sort of look at the fixtures right now and you're thinking, right, Castleford, potentially tricky, but still winnable game. But then you've got Lee.
Yep.
You've got Huddersfield at home.
Yep.
Rovers, Salford, Huddersfield again, Lee, Leeds. Leeds are a basket case right now. And it's at home, so you're thinking, wow. You know, there's some wins there. You should be looking at six out of eight minimum, I think, games that all are going to, that should be winning there. That obviously potential and expectation is to win those games. And You do that, they're going to be right up there in those playoff spots. I'm not going to say top two or anything daft like that, but they're going to cement themselves as a third, fourth, or fifth place side, and they'll be comfortably in those playoffs. And then, like you say, you get to the end of the season, you never know. We'll have Scott Taylor back, you know, Jamie Shaw will be in contention, where he fits in, I don't know, but maybe there'll be a place for him on the bench. You know, Massimo Tongo's a reinforcement in the prop. And like I say, you look at Massimo Tongo right now, when eventually he does come back, he's got to fight for a new deal. So if he wants to stay at this club, he's got to show that he warrants, you know, a deal. He's got to show that he warrants a percentage on that cap. So if he don't turn up, then he's out the door. So you sort of look at it from a personal point of view. If you're him right now, you're going to come back into that side and you're going to go all guns blazing because your future depends on it. So it's exciting to see what can happen as the season goes on. So yeah, looking forward to watching all
right,
now.
Let's just take a minute, right? Let's just take a minute, right? Let's say Shaw gets back to full fitness, right? And he's pushing for a place in the first team. In my opinion, you can't replace Connor with Shaw.
No.
And unless we get a problem in the halves, you know, if Reynolds falls over or Snead falls over and we have to move Connor up into the halves, well, then that solves that problem. And you'd be happy to slot Shaw back into fullback in that eventuality. But let's say we keep everyone fit and Shaw's pushing for a first team place. Do we keep him up? Do we put him on the bench and bring him on maybe as a replacement, you know, what, like as a utility back? I've never seen him play any position other than fullback. Never seen him on the wing. A lot of fullbacks have deputised on the wing. You look at Origin, you get people like Trbojevic, because you've got Tedesco for New South Wales, who's par excellence, probably the best fullback in the world. Trbojevic is snapping at his heels. He's playing in the centres on Wednesday night because he can't dislodge Tedesco. I can't really see Scholl playing in the centres. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Can't really see him playing on the wing. Do you keep him on the bench? Do you even use him as a backup hooker? You know, or something like that, coming off the bench in the last 20 minutes against a tiring opposition, you know, with his speed to kind of break down an opposition. I don't know. I mean, is it a luxury to have a player like that on the bench that upsets your rotation? You know, I don't know. And I really feel for Jamie Shaw because, you know, prior to his injury, one of the first names on the team sheet for me and always would be. Just because of his speed and his positional awareness. And, yeah, he's got a mistake in him, but he did better than he didn't do, you know? So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, to me, it's almost nailed on that Radford will be knocking on the door and trying to take in the gas.
Even with now levels there. Yeah. Interestingly, you say a hooking option, because Tim, who was a writer for Up the Cream, also listening to this podcast, wrote an article a few months ago, literally about this, about where does Jamie Shaw fit into the side when he comes back. And he used the comparison of Rob Burrough, who obviously played the predominant of his career at Leeds as a scrum half. Sinfield moved from 13 to 6. They put Maguire, you know, alongside him in the halves, and that left, obviously, pushed Rob Burrough out. But then he adapted his game and was a nine, and was a very good nine as well. We all remember that 40-metre try at Old Trafford where he picked the ball up at hooker and just scooted away, and next minute he's under the sticks, you know, dancing his way under and around defenders. And he adapted his game. He also prolonged his career by doing that. I sort of think right now, look at Jamie Shaw's qualities. It's his elusiveness. It's obviously his pace. There's no reason why he can't adapt and play, I don't know, 10, 15 minute spells at hooker where literally just picks the ball up all the time and scoots and gets players pushing up with him. He's quick enough to find gaps. He scored tries for all, even when he comes in, you know, comes in at dummy half, picks the ball up and off he goes. I always remember a famous one at St Helens in 2015, which sealed a win there on Easter Monday, where he literally did exactly that. So, yeah, I think there's some mileage there. I mean, there's going to have to be a place for him somewhere. I mean, obviously, why keep him on the books if that was the case? So, yeah, it's something to obviously think about as the summer months, you know, endure. And when he comes back, obviously, he's training again now. It was nice to see those videos, the rehab videos of him coming back. And one thing I do appreciate with long-term injuries, and this is where we can come into the Josh Griffin stuff, is his mental health and the effect that it has on people. And when you think you've just done your ACL, you're, what, 28 going on 29, and it's a long-term injury like that, you must, you know, what does that, how does that affect a player? You must, you know, you're at rock bottom, aren't you? You must be absolutely gutted. And you sort of look at Griffin now, he's 30, 31, he's just done the same, he's going to be out for, you know, probably 8 or 9 months, probably next season again before we see him. I think that goes without saying. And you sort of look at Shaw right now, then videos, he's come back, his attitude seems great. I think there's obviously, you know, a good human being there, one that's prepared to work hard, and now he's got to show some qualities, you know, to fight back and get in that side again. And I think there is actually some mileage there, again, to get him on that bench and put him on the bench and see what happens, whether that be at Hooker, whether that just comes on, you know, it's just a player who picks the ball up and scouts all the time and say, push through him, never know, it could work.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. You know, it's there's something to be said for that kind of utility back position, just sitting on the bench. You know, I mean, that's basically what Cam Scott's been doing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
just on the bench and coming on if anyone gets a little bit of a bang or whatever. It's just that I'd like to see Shaw, you know, maybe in you know, just to try and I need to see him in another position other than fullback. You know, or then do you put him on at fullback and say to Jake Connor, you've got a roving brief, go wherever you want on the field?
Well, that's another option, especially if you're chasing a game. I mean, if you chase, we've done that before. We used to do that with Jordan Abdo when he came off the bench. Those,
yeah,
I remember the game at Wigan in 2016, the playoffs, where literally he did that and it worked because all almost won the game, didn't they? Yeah. I think that after that freak Steve Michaels try, they were winning the game. Then John Bateman obviously throws an offload out of his arse and Sam Powell went under the sticks and that was that. But, you know, it gave all a chance of winning and going to Old Trafford. So there's definitely some options there. Obviously some things for Brett Hodgson to think about. It will be interesting to see how that pans out as the summer goes. I mean, the big incident, obviously, on Saturday that we've dodged for 26 minutes now was obviously the injury to Josh Griffin. And I must admit, I've got my opinions on it. They're pretty strong. But first of all, there's a bloke there who's just torn his Achilles. Everyone's talking about it. Everyone's had their opinion. I think some people have been absolutely ruthless, too far with it. And the way I'm going down this now is rugby league preaches about state of mind, mental health, look how good we are, look what we do, blah, 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 blah. This bloke's just deleted his Twitter account now because some of the comments this weekend. That's disgusting.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I was fairly lucky, I think, because on the Fox coverage over here, they don't show the studio discussions at halftime or whatever. They just go to a long break over here and show match highlights from the NRL. So I didn't hear what Wilkin had to say, but I believe that it was fairly distasteful. And you know, he's a red and white prick and always will be. But you know, to try and say that he should have kept hold of the ball when you've just had something happen to you that is just about the most painful injury that you can endure to your lower leg. I mean, he's lucky he didn't, you know, lose his lunch, never mind anything else. I mean, that he was in absolute, holy, screaming agony. And yeah, he dropped the ball. The referee could have blown up earlier, and I've seen refs blow when they look like there's a bad injury, but you can't blame Theo Farge. He played to the whistle. It's instinct that you pick the ball up when it's on the floor and you run it in. He had an open try line in front of him. You can't have a go at Theo Farge. You can't have a go at Josh Griffin because he's in absolute agony, and when you're in agony, you're not thinking straight, and he dropped the ball just instinct because he went in to grab his leg because he's in absolute agony. The person that then becomes the person that you can either blame or not blame is the referee. And yet, I've seen referees blow when it looks like there's a serious injury. But, you know, when the referee's looking at it, how does the referee know it's a serious injury? How does the referee know he's not just gone down with cramp? And then if Farge picks the ball up and is disallowed a try, well, then it's controversy the other way, isn't it? Because the referee's blown up for what turned out to be not a serious injury. Farge has been disallowed a try and, you know, every St. Helens supporter then is up in arms. I don't think, I mean, it's one of those horrible incidents that I don't think there's a right answer to, unfortunately. And my thoughts are with Josh Griffin because that's a horrendous, horrendous injury for a player who was absolutely carving it up, who's now going to be sat on the sidelines for the best part of the last year of his contract. It worries me, for his mental health. You've got idiots who've probably never played the game or have certainly never played the game to the level that he has, saying on Twitter, you shouldn't have dropped the ball. I mean, bore off. That's just wrong.
Yeah, 100%. To have a pop at him for letting go of the ball in that situation. And there was plenty of them as well. I just thought it was absolutely nuts. I don't necessarily have a problem with Theo Farge either.
And Hull fans as well.
Yeah.
And Hull fans as well. Which that really upsets me.
Yeah. You sort of get the Dobbin on the other side of the river piping up and being an absolute dickhead as usual, but Hull fans doing it as well. Yeah. There was a few of them as well that were having a go at Josh Griffin. Probably the same ones who had a go at Jake Connor for that ball at the end as well. And I'm just thinking, what are you doing, pal? You know, what? Have you ever snapped your Achilles tendon? I mean, I know a bloke has. He's called Sean French and he said he nearly passed out.
Yes. Yeah, it's a horrible, horrible injury. You know, you saw straight away when he went down. Did you see the angle his foot went to?
Mm.
Literally, his foot snapped up.
Yeah.
Because you've got nothing holding it back, you
exactly,
know?
Yeah.
It's just, oh, Jesus. I mean, your calf muscle and your Achilles, it kind of ruptures right up the back of your calf muscle like a Venetian blind.
Mm.
Do you know? It's a horrendous injury. And for people to then... You know, it's a split-second thing. You're in absolute agony. It must feel like you've been shot by a sniper.
That's what I've heard the analogy compared to, yeah.
Yeah. I remember when Kevin James did it, the Welsh winger who scored at Wembley for us in 85. He did it in an A-team game for Hull that I was, both lucky enough to be at and unlucky enough to be at because it'll live with me for the rest of my life. It sounded like a gunshot going off.
Mm.
It snapped. It was an audible snap. It happened right in front of me. It was awful, and he was screaming for his mother in front of me when they took him off on the stretcher. It was awful, and I wouldn't wish it on anybody, and it's really unfortunate. And, you know, when you look at it, again, that actually cements how good we were, do you know? Because we got beaten by a controversial try like that, an interception, and then that lucky try at the end, which was kind of academic,
yeah.
Do you know? If it wasn't for that, and if it wasn't for the interception, we win that game. And they're two freak pieces of play. Freak pieces of play. You know, it's not a victory, it's a moral victory for us, I think. You know, if nothing else.
Does it also show, like you say, everything's against us, but we'll have that fight in them to not be fazed by it and keep on going? I mean, that the mental toughness in LFC right now is absolutely worlds away to what it was. You know, sorry, worlds better than what it was last year. And you can't really praise that enough. And it gives us a fighting chance of winning every game. And I know obviously we got comfortably beat at St Helens last week, but that, as I say, those mental components, they gave us a chance of winning the game that looked like it had gone. So to have all that adversity and come through it and still be in that situation, obviously it's a lot of spirit showing, a lot of guts and a lot of character. I did have a big pop at Liam Moore on Saturday because I was stood in the Cass End. I actually managed to get a ticket in the Cass End. So I stood in the terracing on my own, pretty much in the corner, you know, staying away from all the smelly rodents to the middle of the sticks. And it happened right in front of me, literally 20, I'm 20 metres away from it. The old fans in the, as I said, if you're looking at the game, the old fans to the right of the pitch are getting the best view of that you can possibly imagine as well. And everyone in the ground knew that it was something very serious and that it was potentially, dare I say, even career threatening. It was a very serious injury. Yeah. Everyone knew. You didn't have to be a bloody doctor or a physio to let that out. You sort of knew as soon as he pulled up there, you're thinking, shit. You know, oh God, he's gone here. I mean, I didn't even look at Theo Farge, picked the ball up straight away. I still have my eyesight on Josh Griffin. That's how bad it was. And to actually not notice and not say, oh, it could have been cramp or it could have been this. I'm thinking, really? Like I say, you don't have to be a PhD to bloody work that out. It wasn't difficult. And this is where I said we've got a duty of care. Right, I look at this from a junior coach point of view as well. And if that was one of my 11s and the referee didn't stop the game, I would be absolutely going mental. I know it's maybe different because they're kids and we're talking about adults right now, but why should it be? You know, we preach about player welfare all the time. We preach about mental health. We've got, you know, we're supposed to be this all-inclusive game. We're supposed to have morals. We're supposed to be decent. I think the referee, under no circumstances there, should have stopped the game straight away. And then people say, no, you can't do that because the ball went dead. So what? You can just start again with a play of the ball. And that's probably where I did get it wrong. So I said it should have been a Saints play of the ball on social media. Should have just been a whole play of the ball, replay the play, get on with it. Because it's a freak situation that you're not going to see, you know, hopefully ever again. And I just look at it from that thing and say the referee should have stopped that game because he's got a duty of care towards a player. It's as simple as that for me. And I look at referees right now, they're robotic. They've got no common sense. They do everything by the book. Does it need to be the case? Not really. Because like I say, the most important thing for me there was the safety and the well-being of the player. And if everything else is irrelevant, you just stop the game, you get your medics on, you deal with it, and then you play on after that.
Yep, I get where you're coming from. And like I say, I'll reiterate what I said. I don't think there's a right and wrong answer to this. I think it's one of those things. It happens very rarely, and you know, unfortunately, it wasn't on their line when it happened. Because if it was on their line when it happened, and someone picks up the ball and starts to run full length of the field, the referee's got thinking time and will probably blow his whistle. Unfortunately, it happened 10 meters from our line, and in the blink of an eye, Farge was over. You're right. I mean, we do champion, you know, the player welfare thing and all the rest of it, and especially with all the head injury stuff that's going on at the moment, it's great to see, and we're a leader in world sport for that kind of stuff. I don't think that in this particular case, I don't know if I was a referee, I don't know if I'd have handled it any differently. I just think it happened in the blink of an eye. Farge was over within, I've counted it, he's over within 2.5 seconds. And that's, you know, it's unfortunate, and it's unfortunate where on the field it happened, and it's awful for Griff. It really is. But as a referee, I don't know, mate. It'd be nice if he blew up. If he blew up, though, I think then Saints have got a right to feel aggrieved, because you've got a player that went down, dropped the ball in front of him, Saints player picks it up clean and scores. I think it's just one of those things, mate. I don't think there's a perfect answer to it.
We got tagged before we did this podcast by FC Monkey, another listener of this, Paul Stockman. Yep. Put a clip up of the Fremo thing in the Cash Cup game last year where literally he makes contact with Grant Millington, and it wasn't Grant Millington's head, it must be said. It looked like it was his upper torso. And he breaks away. Yep. He wouldn't have scored the try because there was a couple of cash fields in the cash players in the backfield. But Huller on the front foot, and you never know. You know, blah blah blah. What happens? You go from there. But the referee stopped the game straight away. Mm. And the referee, I should have actually.
I think that's the difference there.
Yeah, because he didn't score. Yeah, but even still, he didn't know that. He didn't know the Fremo was breakaway. He didn't even look at Fremo. He didn't even turn his head as Fremo went past him. You know, he could have scored for all days long for all he knew. All that referee cared about was Millington on the floor. That's the difference there. The referee there didn't give a bollocks about Fremo. All they cared about was Millington. The referee that day, I can't remember where it bloody was now, but the referee that day got it absolutely bob on for me, because his only thought process was Grant Millington. That's how it should be. Liam Moore's thought process should have been Josh Griffin. Bollocks to Theo Farge. Bollocks to Tommy Makinson. That's another thing. Tommy Makinson was screaming at the ref saying, look, he's... So he knew. Every Tom, Dick and Harry in the crowd knew. But... for me, like I said, the referee that day against Castleford, his only thought process was Grant Millington. Liam Moore should have been thinking, right, Josh Griffin, bollocks to everything else.
I'm hearing you. I get it. But again, it's just the situation that it was at the time. Where we were on the field, the passage of play that had gone immediately before it, I don't know whether he might have been momentarily... unsighted or whatever, and yet you're right, Makinson did the right thing and said Sarah's injured. Farge for me did the right thing. You play to the whistle. That's what you want every one of your players to do. You play to the whistle. The whistle didn't come, so it's got to be on the feet of the referee, no one else. But again, I don't know if a player goes down with cramp and drops the ball, well, tough shit. You know, if a player goes down if a player rolls his ankle and goes down and drops the ball, tough shit. Mm. You know, how does a referee make an on-the-spot diagnosis that's a bad injury when a player's gone down with a lower leg injury? You can't. I don't think you can as a referee. I don't think you can make that split-second diagnosis, if you like.
Isn't that what they're paid to do, though? To be, you know, to go off instinct, to be sharp, to be on point. And...
yeah,
we've done referee games ourselves, mate. You've done junior games. I've done junior games, and they are tough. And God forbid, I've never been in a situation like that, and hopefully I never will. But I'd like to think that if I was, I would make that call straight away and say, right, I don't care if our fullback has gone the full length of the field, or if he's running away, or if a big prop's just brought the line and put someone on the floor and he's clutching his leg. I'd like to think I'd go, right, you know what? Stop there, lads. And this physio needs to come on, or this club doctor needs to come on and treat that player now before. You know, before anything happens, and I don't know. It is a tough one. It is a really tough one.
But show me the rule. Show me the rule that says that you have to do that.
Well, that's where I say decency and morals. That's where that comes into play. Because do we have to do everything by a rule book? I know this can open up a real big can of worms now because you're saying where to draw the line and all that, but
yeah, otherwise you get chaos. But you know, I feel like I'm defending him, and I'm not. I'm really not. I don't think there's a right answer to it. I really don't. Like, it's really unfortunate, and it was a horrible situation, and arguably cost us the game. But I don't know. I don't know if there's a right answer there. I really don't. Although you gotta say that's probably the most controversial moment in a whole match for probably 10 years.
Yeah, I mean,
it really is. You know, you can maybe talk about, you know, one or two of the Liam Watts sending offs. You know, probably the one where he raised his arm while he was about to get hit in the ribs and hit, was it McLaurin?
Michael McLaurin.
Ended up getting sent off for it, even though he was carrying the ball. It's probably the last time that you can look at a refereeing decision that's gone against us that you can actually talk about at this length. But, you know, I think they get it right more often than they get it wrong. And I just think, I honestly just think, mate, it's just one of those things. I really do. And it's a horrible thing to say. And you're right, probably did cost us the game. But I don't think me and you talking about it, I don't think we can come up with the answer.
It's a tough one.
Unfortunately.
There is an absolute split opinion here, absolutely. Because you've got people like Jonathan Davis on TV defending it, then there's Leon Price going absolutely nuts. I mean, just got his tweets in front of me now. He's saying the referee should have stopped play immediately. Everyone in the field watching the game could tell it was very serious. You know, blow your whistle, stop play, then we're not even having this discussion. But then I suppose the Saints' backlash would be, well, Theo Farge has just picked the ball. But then it was to say Theo Farge would have put the ball down, because if the referee blows his whistle, then he don't pick it up, does he? But it's, I don't know, it is a really tough one, it is. But I just lean towards the side of the player comes first in all these situations. You could sense it. Like you say, you didn't have to be a doctor to work it out. And yeah, I just... Maybe no. I'm just a nice guy in a world full of dickheads. I don't know, but yeah, I don't know.
Count me in that.
No, I'd say you're one of these blokes actually that do have morals, mate. But
kind of. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just it was really tough. Like you say, you're not going to get a moment like that, hopefully, in a game ever again, or certainly for a long while, where you get a controversial topic like that that's going to split debate. And it was interesting. Like I say, I quoted Leon Price there. It was funny actually engaging on social media, because I don't usually do that because it drives me insane, but thought I'd have a little play on my Twitter while I was on the way home, and ended up arguing with Richard Silver, who called me an absolute weapon for my opinion on it. I was like, wow, that was interesting. So I just replied to him, right, what about this absolute weapon called Leon Price then, who was an absolute legend of the game, Great Britain, you know, international Super League winner with Bradford Bulls, St Helens. Is he an absolute weapon as well then? Because he's pretty much said the same thing. It just went quiet. I was like, yeah. And that just sums up referees sometimes for me. They're very robotic, and they just don't have common sense sometimes. And that's where I'm getting at again. I just don't think Liam Moore had common sense than it. You don't have to do everything by the book. If you blow up there, no. I look at it, people are saying to me, oh, you wouldn't be saying that if it was the other way around. Well, actually, I would. Because I look at it from a junior point of view, where if that's one of my lads, or if that was one of, I don't know, if we're playing Oldham's Vikings, or if we're playing Scale, or blah, 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 and that happens, the kid comes first. And it's the same here, the player comes first. So actually, I would have the same opinion. It don't change. I think we've been pretty consistent here with our opinions this year. When you look at set restarts, we moan about it every week. We look at the stuff in the NRL right now with head-eye contacts, we moan about that every week. And I think we are pretty consistent. So actually, no, I don't think I would change my mind if it was the other way around. I'm pretty level-headed like that. And I just think... Yeah, you know, if you just got to switch on there as a referee, and you've got to think, right, there's a bloke there who's dropped the ball for a reason. He's screaming. He's on the deck. He's in absolute, you know, physical agony right here, right now. You've just got to blow up. Simple as that for me. And yeah, and I get why it splits opinion, because you've got two sides of the coin here, and you've obviously got two different loyalties if you're a St Helens, or if you're an old fan, or if you're a neutral, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it is a tough one, but that's my stance on it anyway. I don't think I'll ever budge there.
Well, fair enough. And look, while we're on the game as well, before we move away and go to NRL or whatever else, there's just two things that I want to really mention about the game as well, is that when he came on, I thought Cam Scott was brilliant. I thought he stood up. I thought defensively he was fantastic. And he took his try really, really well as well. I thought he was very, very good. And how good was it to see the return of that short side penalty play and Danny out and going over? That is my absolute favourite play of all time. And, you know, that's what sparked the comeback against Rovers, you know, when we were, you know, 20-0 down, and that was one of the tries that we scored against Rovers
there. It was, yeah.
And, Yeah, just it was really good to see that that had been brought back out of the locker again. I love that.
It actually gets me how many times it works.
Yeah,
how did people not see it's coming? And it's always on the right edge as well.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we never do it on the left ever. Yeah,
it's a funny one. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that actually. Cause it is funny. It's like how many times that play works and actually comes off. It's ridiculous.
It's great, isn't it? I love it. Absolutely love it.
Absolutely. Well, we'll leave that there then for obviously the Hull SC and move towards the NRL, and this is probably where I have a little snooze and go into autopilot because, oh God, here we go. Penrith Panthers then, finally lost the game.
We've only got four games to talk about, so we'll be quick.
Yeah.
Let's talk about everything other than the one you don't want to talk about.
Yeah, let's just talk about Brisbane getting stuffed again or Melbourne. I tell you what, mate, what did make me feel all this weekend, Preston Campbell's son making his debut. Now, I remember Preston Campbell obviously playing for Penrith and being part of their grand final win in 2003. I also remember him finishing his career at the Titans. I think it was about 2010, 2011. You know, I was just coming through as an 18, 19-year-old then. I remember that.
And Preston Campbell's the architect of the Indigenous All-Stars game, really. It was all his idea. He was the driving force behind all of that. So he's an absolute legend in the Indigenous world as well. I mean, he's actually like an elder, and he's thought of in really glowing terms. When he talks, people listen. To see his son play, and his son was electric. Every time he got the ball, he was fantastic. I thought the Storm beat him. It was a depleted Storm because of
Origin.
Because of Origin commitments and everything. But you know, sometimes when a team are down like that, they do stand up. Some don't.
That's why I dig
beat the Broncos. Yeah, very sly. Dragons beat the Broncos, but you got to say, yet again, Albert Kelly stood up like you wouldn't believe. I mean, you know, three try assists, I think, for Albert, and he looked pretty good.
He's run well so far. It's just a shame he's playing for Brisbane.
Well, that's exactly it. And unfortunately, you know, half time it was 24-18 and they were right in it, the Broncos. And you honestly thought that they might go on in the second half and push a little bit, but it just didn't happen. Unfortunately, the Dragons just ran all over them second half. And now let's go to the big one, mate. Let's go to the Tigers and the Panthers. And yes, the Panthers were very, very under strength. But they should have done better than they did. They didn't play well. If I was a Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs supporter right now, I'd be looking at Burton and going, oh, okay. We've signed him as our big halfback hope for the next 3 years. He didn't look good. And he wasn't behind a pack that was going backwards, because the Panthers pack actually stood up. And that pack, you know, was still a pretty formidable pack. I mean, you still had
James Fisher-Harris, Spencer Leno, Kikau,
you still got some big boppers there and everything. But I thought Luke Garner was spectacular for the Tigers. I thought Twal did very well. I thought Leilua did very well out of the second row. Brooks did. It was the best game I've seen Luke Brooks play in a long time.
I was interested to get your thoughts on him, because I actually thought he did go really well. One thing you can say about Luke Brooks, you know, he might have opinions on his actual quality, but his effort, you know, he never throws in the towel.
Never gives up. It's just sometimes his application in it. His effort's always there. And look, that winning streak of yours was going to come to an end at some point. And if it was going to come to an end, it was likely to come to an end during Origin period when you're depleted. And I'm just happy it was us. Because the Tigers are now, you know, 2 points off the eight again. That's how tight it is around that bottom half of the eight. I mean, the Dragons are on 12 points.
Yeah, 6 wins.
Warriors are ninth on 12, you know, 6 wins. Tigers, 5 wins, you know, they're on 10 points. They're only 2 points off the eight now.
And then again, the last time you made the eight, I think I was still in nappies.
Thank you. Well, the last time we made the eight, we had Gareth Ellis playing for us.
There you go. Yeah. And Gareth Ellis had a full head of hair.
Yes, the last time we made the eight, Gareth Ellis had a hairstyle. Yes, that's very true. So, yeah, I mean, look, I don't think we're going to make the eight. The thing that gets me is that two teams that I thought would be in the top four this year, the Titans and the Raiders, don't look like they're going to hit the eight.
But Raiders, that, obviously, that's what, the way it is at the moment. Their problems are well documented, isn't it, Raiders? I think Titans are just struggling for consistency, and it's actually already weird again. You know, web, that hole I've actually found this year. But yeah, Gold Coast look red hot one week and then look terrible the next.
Yeah, totally. And you know, I think it's nailed on to be a Panthers Storm Grand Final again. Although the Eels will have a lot to say about that, I think. I think the Eels
look good at Newcastle, didn't they?
They've lost three games. Yeah, they look very, very good. And they've lost three games this season, but the games they've lost are games that will have really woken them up. I mean, losing to the Sharks a couple of weeks ago, that would have really woken them up. And I think that the Eels and the Bunnies are probably the only other two teams that could break that Panthers Storm kind of duopoly at the moment. I think the Roosters got too many injuries. I don't think Manly are good enough. And then I think there's daylight after that. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens there. But yeah, I think it's still Panthers Storm Grand Final as a thing. Now, obviously, we've touched on Origin. And the way that the teams line up and everything is pretty interesting, actually. You look at the New South Wales team, and now obviously I've lived in New South Wales my entire time that I've been over here. But I really dislike Freddie Fittler. I think he's prick of a bloke. So I'm not sure, actually. I'm not going to say that I'm a Queensland supporter, because I'm not. I'm a Blues. But I didn't mind watching Queensland win that last year, because I thought it gave... I thought it gave Fittler a bit of comeuppance, because he can be a real arrogant piece of work. The way that the New South Wales team lines up this week, obviously he's picked players in form, which is really good. You know, you've got Tedesco at fullback, wingers are Toto and Adokar, centres are Latrell Mitchell and Tom Trbojevic, and I think that's where they have a problem. Mitchell hasn't been great. This year he's been all right. I mean, he obviously had that long ban for everything he did in the game against the Tigers, and Tom Trbojevic is not a centre. He's a fullback, and I'm not sure whether that's going to really come back to bite him, the Latrell Mitchell Tom Trbojevic centre partnership. Obviously the halves, you'll be happy to say Luai and Cleary, and I think that everybody in New South Wales, he's happy that we've got a club combination at 6 and 7. I think that's important. And I think that they'll do well. I think Cleary will do well. I think Luai might get a bit spooked by it, but I'll be really interested to see how they go as a house partnership against Queensland. I think the other place that the Blues have got a problem is the pack. It's a pretty light pack. Saifiti, Cook, Trbojevic in the front row. Cameron Murray, Tarek Sims and Isaiah Year at lock, and then White and Paula Haas and probably Liam Martin off the bench as well. Pretty light, I think, that as a pack. Be interesting to see exactly what they can do in the face of what's going to be, given that it's a Queensland home game up there. I think Queensland are going to come up absolutely firing. Now obviously Queensland have had a few injury things of their own as well. Ponga's not playing, he's injured. Then they've had another couple of withdrawals as well. But the Queensland team, Holmes at fullback, Coates and Felt on the wings, Gagai and Capewell in the centres, Munster and Cherry Evans in the halves, that's strong. Welsh, Harry Grant, Farsamalui in the front row. Harry Grant's an interesting one. He hasn't played 80 minutes for over 12 months, and they haven't got a hooker on the bench. So that's going to be really interesting. He's just back from a hamstring strain, and he hasn't played 80 minutes in over 12 months since he played for the Tigers, actually. Be very, very interesting to see how he goes. And then Kafusi, Fafita in the back row with Jai Arrow locking the scrum, Brimson, Suar, Fotueka, and Offengawi off the bench. And they've brought Ben Hunt. This is the late mail. They've brought Ben Hunt into the squad because Reid Mahoney yesterday for Parramatta did his shoulder. So they brought Ben Hunt into the squad to act as cover for Hooker, but I don't think they're going to put him on the bench. So, interesting. Be, I think if it's won by Queens, it'll be won in the forwards. That's my tip.
Interesting. I think New South Wales, their pack, theirs is a mixture, isn't it? Because you think off the bench, they've got Pernas and obviously Junior Power, who are absolutely huge. I mean, they're two double-decker buses, aren't they? And then you've got some mobility in the pack with your Isaiah Yeo's and you, obviously your Liam Martins, obviously coming off the bench. It'd be interesting. I think in this day and age, like you say, the game is faster. You've got to prepare for that, but also you can't roll out the big fella, so you've got to prepare that as well. So maybe they've sort of like tried to meet in the middle a little bit. I still think the New South Wales backline is ridiculous. It's even if you are playing a couple of blocks out of position. Well, I say that Latrell Mitchell's best position for me is still centre anyway. So it's only Tom Tuivasa that is sort of playing out of position.
It's not so much that he's playing out of position for me for Latrell Mitchell. It's that he's out of form. You look at his figures, just completely black and white figures, and you think, oh, you're brilliant. You know, I think he's got four or five tries, and I think he's maybe got maybe 10 try assists. But a lot of those were in the games where Souths have won by 60 points.
Yeah.
You know, or Souths have put a big score on a team. And I think it flatters him a little bit. I don't think he's in the same form as he was, has been in the last 2 years, personally.
Well, he's got a point to prove, though, as well, after being axed last year, hasn't he? So, if that doesn't fire up, then what does? So, that'll be interesting. From a Panthers point of view, I can't wait for this Origin because, looking at it, we've got six players playing for New South Wales, obviously one in Capewell playing for Queensland as well. You've got mate against mate there, haven't you?
Totally. Mate against mate, state against state. So what are you tipping? What's your Dan tip?
Well, obviously New South Wales. I'm going to go for the Blues probably by 6 points. I say it's going to be tight and horrible.
Okay, I'll go Queensland by four.
Queensland by four. I think the thing is about Queensland, I always find they're more dogged than New South Wales. Look at some of their players. Cameron Munster's your prime example of that. He's absolutely quality, don't get me wrong, but he's relentless. And that's what I think with Queensland sometimes. They just have that, that little bit more, the willingness to want that loose ball or, that play or to put that big shot on. I don't know. But, yeah, I think New South Wales will actually win this series. Probably 2-1. I'm going to say they'll win the first two games and then lose the third. That's probably really optimistic.
And that's probably... Okay, that's great. Because I love that because that's, you remember, was it last year, a year before, I got it absolutely right.
I changed my tip
the day of the game, remember?
Yeah, I did, yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
Well, I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to say Queensland will win it 2-1. I think Queensland win this first game. I think New South Wales will win their home game, the second game. I think it'll go down to the decider at Suncorp. And I think, personally, I think that Queensland will win the decider.
Fair enough. Yeah, we'll see how that pans out. I'm surprised you didn't have a bigger gloat fest with West Tigers there, I must admit, especially with the Ivan Cleary factor. Did you notice at Leichhardt Oval, obviously the eighth wonder of the world, a couple of interesting moments from that game. One was Dane Laurie, the ex-Panther, faking injury. And even Blocker called that out as an avid Tiger, saying there's no place for that in the game, blah, blah, blah. But it was interesting to see some of the fans in it. I think maybe they went a little bit too far. And I don't want to go on a pissing contest here because every club has dickheads in the fan base. We all know that. But, some of the reports that we've heard, chucking beer at Penrith fans and maybe going a little bit too far in the celebrations. I mean, I sort of get that as well. It's a big grudge match now with obviously what happened with the Clearys and... it's a derby at the end of the day, Western Sydney derby. We see it at Ullen Rovers all the time. I don't know, maybe this went too far, but as I say, I do get that emotions can run high, and obviously from a Tiger point of view, to get that one over Penrith and to get one over Ivan Cleary, that must have felt pretty sweet.
I think the seeds of that were sown last season when, we had a loss to them and somebody was shouting and screaming at the coach's box and he was waving and blowing kisses.
Mm.
And I just think that left a nasty taste. But I think that's come home to roost. I think that's a little bit of karma more than anything else. I don't think, like I say, great coach, prick of a bloke. that's been my view on him. Even when he was the Tigers coach, I never liked him as a bloke. He just seems to be a real arrogant turd to me. And the reason I haven't really gloated about it, mate, is because you had a massively depleted squad.
Can you beat what's in front of you?
Massively depleted squad. Yeah, you got to play what's in front of you, and we did, and we won. But I don't think it's something that I should be shouting from the roof. tops about, because you know, at the end of the day, you had your first choice 6 and 7 out, you had your first choice 13 out, you had your first choice, you know, you can name any, you know, you're probably one of the best wingers in the comp was out as well.
Yeah,
in Brian Tottenham.
Fowler, yeah.
You know, what do you do? You know, it's just you play what's in front of you, and like I say, I think it was a bit distasteful, but I think he's kind of sown that himself. I think he's reaped what he's sown. Oh, and just a correction as well, mate. The game 2's at Suncorp for Origin, game 3's at back in Sydney. So
well, that is interesting.
In that case, I think it'll be Queensland will go 2-0 up, and I think the last game will be a dead rubber.
No, I'll stick with mine. I'm going to go New South Wales, Queensland, New South Wales. To finish off then, Hull FC, NRL Down Under connections. We've gone for Canberra Raiders this week.
Yeah, I did go with Canberra because, like I say, I've been talking about Canberra a lot the last couple of months, and you know, probably my second team a little bit. I used to like the way they played. I haven't liked the way they played this year, obviously. And I think they've been probably the biggest disappointment in the league, actually. I think they've been awful. And obviously with everything that's gone on with George Williams and everything. So, obviously, the most recent one is obviously Josh Hodgson, who played for us and for Rovers before he came over to Canberra and has been probably the most successful English import for quite a while.
Would you say more than Sam Burgess?
Probably. I mean, Burgess won a comp, which Josh Hodgson hasn't. But I think Hodgson changed the way that Canberra Raiders played. And I think it was off the back of Josh Hodgson that Canberra Raiders became a top four side. And I don't think you can say the same for Sam Burgess. I think Sam Burgess was part of it. But I think Hodgson was the reason for Canberra changing the way that they played. And probably to his detriment. Because as he's got older and he's slowed down a little bit, they're still looking for him to pull out those miraculous plays from acting half and everything. And he just can't do it because he's, you know, his knees are gone and everything. And he's just not that quick as he was. And he's had a little bit laid against him, saying that, you know, when he's fit and he plays, Canberra's attack looks pedestrian, and it's because they're looking to go through him all the time rather than go through George Williams, which is possibly another reason why George Williams wasn't too happy then. But yeah, so I honestly think I'd stick to that. I think Josh Hodgson's been the most successful English player over here in the last 10 years.
I'll take that. Play two games for all. We'll take
other
that.
Other players then? We'll take that. Yeah, it was us. Yeah, we came through our ranks. Other players then, Sean Berrigan. I think we spoke about that last week when we were talking about the Brisbane Broncos. He actually finished his career at Canberra. Scott Logan, remember Scott Logan?
Yeah,
big rough ass prop we got from. We got him from the Roosters, and then he went to Wigan for a couple of seasons off us, and then finished his again another one who finished his career at Canberra. Jason Smith, as well. Ended up at Canberra. We all know the Jason Smith story, and you know, probably the best overseas signing that we've made since Sterling. I don't think that's another.
No, I think that's pretty fair.
I think that's fair. He did finish off at North Queensland. He had one final season at the Cowboys, but he did very, very well actually when he came back from Hull for Canberra. Ended up had a very, very good season for Canberra in 2005-2006 before he finished off at North Queensland 2007. So, Ivan Henjak, again, who's had more clubs than Nick Faldo, I think. He's another one. Colin Best as well. Colin Best, obviously a Hull player, that early 2000s, I think 2003.
2002, 2003. 3 and 4.
Played very well
first
for
two
us.
Years, yeah, first 2 years at the KCOM.
At the CareCom, yes. And he finished off... he came back over here, actually. So he started at Cronulla. Then he went to St George after Hull. Then went to Canberra for a couple of seasons. Then a couple of seasons at Souths. And then went back to Cronulla for a couple of seasons as well. He ended up making nearly 275 appearances over here. And, you know, and then add to that another 80, I think, for Hull. A really, really long career for a back. You know, a really good player, very, very elusive and very explosive, very quick. The aforementioned Terry Regan, again, he played for Canberra, and Scott Gale as well, who we mentioned in a Balmain context a couple of a couple of weeks ago. And the other one that we need to mention, Sione Faumuina.
Oh, wow. Wow. I remember his debut at Wakefield, and literally after the Hull FC following that day had those cardboard cut-out masks with his afro, and they were absolutely brilliant. I wish I got one.
But again, you know, one of those players that, you know, three games for Hull, I think.
Yeah.
I think. And one try.
One red card as well.
Absolutely. And I think he finished, he came back and played for Cass, I think, in 2009. But, you know, over here, started at Canberra, didn't do much. Was probably more known as a Warriors or a North Queensland Cowboys player. So, but Sione Faumuina. Because he came over right at the back end of that Super League 2005 season. Didn't he play in that game against Andrew Johns?
No, he played in the league one, but he was suspended for the playoff one.
He was suspended for the playoff, yeah.
We played obviously to decide which team was at home in the playoffs. The last regular round season was Hull v Wyre. They brought about 3,000 fans across, made a racket and won it. And obviously, we went back to their place the week after, and that sort of stuffed them and sent John's home. So that was great.
Yeah. And Blacklock's got that trick first out.
That's right. Yeah. That's the one.
Yeah. So, Sione Faumuina. I thought that one would give you a bit of a smile.
Just picturing those cardboard cutouts.
Nice.
Yeah, they were brilliant. Yeah, good little selection there. Obviously, Hull FC camera players there. Get on to the big boys soon, aren't we? With Souths and Sydney Roosters, so that'll be interesting. A couple more Sydney clubs, there's St George, isn't they? Cronulla, so yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting.
That's gonna be a full day of research for me, I think, because that goes back a long way.
Back when the game was invented in 1908. Oh, hang on a second.
don't get me started.
Yeah, it's a great man as well. I must admit, obviously, I do love my NRL. I absolutely love watching it every weekend. But yeah, when they say things like "that's been a try since 1908," okay, pal, whatever you say. Yeah, so just forget that the game existed 13 years before in the UK. good stuff there, though, mate. And must admit, one thing to finish on: how good it was to be at Leeds Sports Village on Saturday and belt out Old Faithful again, admittedly in the Cass end, who did give me a couple of strange looks towards the end of the game when the comeback was on, because I got a bit excited. But yeah, I got a video just as we were about to kick off, and it was great to actually just watch that full stand, and it's gone a little bit viral now on social media, which I'm glad. But yeah, just to hear it again, best song in rugby league, hands down. Brilliant.
Absolutely, 100%.
And on that note, we'll leave that there for this edition of the podcast. Thanks for your time, pal, and come on, you will.
Cheers, mate.